This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Fintan O'Toole, and his book is We Don't Know Ourselves, A Personal History of Modern Ireland. We all, when we travel, we encounter the famine. 1840s, tragedy of the famine to me was, it was sort of a man-made disaster, wasn't it?
You know, it was. It's still hard to contemplate, you know, because what happened was, of course, you had a very divided society where the land was owned by a very small minority of people. The people who worked the land didn't own their own land. They were tenant farmers, and some of them had as little as a quarter of an acre. Now, if you had a quarter of an acre, there was only one way you could live off it, right, which was the potato. The potato was this miracle crop, right? And actually, the irony here, Rick, is that they know from the records of, say, British Army, you know, the Irish were inducted into the British Army. And so they measured men anyway going in. The Irish were bigger and healthier than the British because actually it was a very good macrobiotic diet. They ate potatoes and they drank buttermilk. And actually it was a pretty good diet. You had meats maybe two or three times a year and they ate vast amounts of potatoes. And this was all very well, but it meant that they were completely dependent on one crop. And then you have this disaster where a thing called Phytophthora infestans, a fungus-like infection, hits the potato crop. And they don't even know what it is. It's never been seen before. And overnight, it just wipes out the thing that the vast majority of people live on. And this is catastrophic. There's still food being exported from Ireland during all this period. All the crops that people grew for to pay the rent are still being exported. But that's
the one thing we should really make very clear. I mean, the peasants, the landless people, the poor, the indigenous Irish, they starved, but the land was mostly owned by people who lived in England, I suppose, and they exported fancy food.
They did, you know, the pork, the beef, the, you know, the grain, a lot of that was going off. And so
maybe if you went to a Protestant soup kitchen, if you left your Catholic heritage, they'd bribe you with some soup.
Well, that did happen. To be fair, there were also wonderful Protestant people, you know. So there were, like, the Quakers, for example, were utterly heroic. I mean, what the Quakers did was extraordinary. I mean, they did open soup kitchens.
Right.
There were extraordinary individuals. There's an American Protestant woman called Asenath Nicholson who's absolutely extraordinary. On her own, with no money, she wasn't a rich woman. She just went to Ireland and you know, forced people to give her money and opened soup kitchens. And so, yes, it's a terrible, terrible story, but there were also enormous numbers of people who really just wanted to help, you know. And it's maybe one of the first cases we have of an international movement of charity to try to help people. You know, we try to do this now, but people were trying to do it.
Right.
Of course, they couldn't cope with the sheer scale of this disaster.
Right. I'm so inspired by Kilmainham Jail. And my favorite thing at Kilmainham Jail, this is where the great patriots, I guess, of the War for Independence were held and then executed. The letters that they wrote the night before they were going to be executed to their mothers and fathers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I do. Yeah, it's heartbreaking, Rick, isn't it? You know, I mean, you can argue about the politics and,
right.
You know, we can all have different views about the politics, but these were human beings as well. You always kind of have to remember this. And I think one of the really interesting things about Ireland from that point of view for people coming from outside is that it's small and it's intimate. And so you do get this big sweep of history. But also, as you say, you can go and you can look at the prison cell.
Yeah.
You can read the letters.
Yeah.
You get a sense of the humanity of people.
And they were going to die in the morning. They were going to die in the morning. And they had one chance to write a letter to their mother. And their heartfelt passion for their cause and their family and their faith.
If you had told those people who are writing those letters, knowing they were going to be executed the following morning by the British, that, you know, in 2023... Ireland would have an equal vote in a European context with Germany, with Italy, with France, you know, with Poland.
Mind blowing. And it hasn't been a cakewalk since then. But
No, it hasn't. And to be fair, when the state was founded, it was a civil war, which is a horrific thing, as everybody in America knows. You were left with actually a very poor country, because what happened was the richest part of Ireland, the part that had all the industry and all the high technology and all the development, was in the northeast up in Belfast.
Right.
And that area was kind of carved out, right? So for political reasons, that remains as part of the United Kingdom, still is.
So in other words, London took the best
London took the
land
industrial and, part of it.
Yeah.
So what we were left with was actually a very agricultural country.
Right.
And agriculture is wonderful, all that sort of stuff, but you don't make a great living out of it unless you've got vast amounts of land, and most people had small farms. So that's really why it was pretty poor and underdeveloped. And it's only really in the 1960s that you begin to get development. And it's a sort of pretty slow process.